Welcome to Season 3 of Conscious Conversations, where we aim to inspire deep and meaningful interactions that grow into a community of practice that is committed to healing, resilience, and expansion. Welcome to another Conscious Conversations with Mabato Montse. In this conversation, I am connecting with Jaloki. Jaloki and I met last year and we've had such an amazing connection. I feel so close to you, Jaloki, and I'm so grateful to have you in my life and as part of the Conscious Conversations community. I've had personal coaching sessions with you, and I really love the work that you do, and I'm hoping our community can also benefit from your insights and from your wisdom as an elder, because I do regard you as an elder. Today, our conversation is around the great invitation and the gift. The world has been carved by the great powers which have spiritually and economically dominated people, pushing them to strive for national dignity and nationhood. Ancestral wisdom and customs, traditional economics have been disrupted, and human energy and skills have been harnessed for the advantage of the conquerors at the disadvantage of the natural world. And by natural world, I'm referring to both the unseen and the seen, the visible and the non-visible. We all have a sense of what our environment is going through, what the earth is going through. We experience the effects of this climate chaos. And so there are still people in the world today who regard anti-black racism and white supremacy as race problems, a simple clash between white and black people. And I think I've come to understand that there is so much more that is going on than just a race issue. And the world's wealthy few and their governments have promoted this narrative across the world, obscuring the real issues in the human crisis. This has greatly reduced the likelihood of the real problem being understood. I hope through this conversation we can revive, restore, and strengthen hope, faith, and trust in the hearts and minds of our listeners. Jaloki, welcome. It is great to have you with us this evening. Can you please share with us a little bit about yourself?
Greetings, much honor and respect to you, dear Mabato. And first, I want to acknowledge and honor our ancestors and ancestresses and those who are unborn and all form and manifestation of life in our dimension, but also all the multiple and multidimensional expression of the one consciousness. I share the feeling of connection with you. It is a great honor to be invited to share this space and this exchange and fun here on your podcast, and greetings to all the listeners and viewers. So you asked me to say a little bit about myself. You know, this story, well, a proverb that says, one eye can see the whole universe except itself. Yeah. It will need another eye to tell it, oh, you're beautiful, you're shiny, you're black, brown, green, orange, gray, you know, like a rainbow, and I love you. So it is always a little difficult for me to talk about myself because I know I'm biased. I know I can see myself the way really I can be seen by others. And I know I, you know, there's the ego that that's standing in the way too. So I'll do my best. I'll say a few things, but I'll ask you and the listeners and viewers not to take me too seriously and too literally. I don't know who I am really. I'm still on that quest. So I think one thing I want to say, which has been central in my life, and it's still informing my experience right now. I'm 63 years old. At age 11, in 1974, I had what I came to understand later can be described as a spiritual mystical experience. I was outside of my body, and I connected with something that I cannot even describe with word. And I'm going to use the term understanding, and I may use it again during this conversation, but I'm not using understanding in the way that it is used as a cognitive intellectual concept. Understanding as that which stands under. I was there standing under everything, all that is, and so there was this understanding, this awareness, this consciousness. I know we were talking about those terms, and I still have trouble defining them with other terms, because I think they are the terms who define other terms. But and then I when I came back to this reality, to this self, since then it's been my quest to get back to that state again. And I've had some experiences. You know, I try smoking a few things, and I try music, and I try all kind of things, and I went to all kind of spiritual quest traditions, and old and modern, and all kind of things, and science also. I am Haitian, and so I have these ancestral lines that are still in kind of a not completely in harmony. You know, my ancestors from Africa, my ancestors from Europe, my ancestors from the America, and all are here now in me. And so this is part of me. Go maybe a little more down to earth to answer your question. I've also, I traveled. I didn't grow up in my country, in Haiti. I lived many years as an adult, but I grew up between Europe and Africa, actually, between Belgium, France, and Senegal. Senegal is really where my personality was formed. I think I was there between age 9 and 18, so it was very important for me. And I've lived in Canada. I have lived, and I say lived, not just visited, lived and worked and, you know, and studied, and for years in the U.S., in Nicaragua, of course, in Haiti, and currently I live in Costa Rica, in the land that is called Costa Rica right now, which is a colonized land that has been stolen by people who were not from that land, not the indigenous people. The indigenous people are still struggling there. I am an engineer. I am an interfaith minister. I am initiated Haitian voodoo priest. I've gone through many kind of spiritual and a mystical initiation. I see myself as a spirit, eternal spirit, trying to make sense of this experience in this little, very limited body, mind, heart on this beautiful plane here.
Before we get into our actual conversation, I've watched a couple of videos around what is going on in Haiti. I think the first time we met, one of the questions I asked you was how the people in Haiti have lived through the different natural disasters that have occurred there, and how that has affected, you know, like ordinary people. What is the economy there like? Because I get the sense that we might share some similarities, especially around people of color and what their struggles might be. What is life like in Haiti? I know you're not there right now, but I'm sure you have a sense of what is going on the ground.
Yes, and also a little disclaimer here, I have not been in Haiti, so that's how we pronounce the name of the country. It's the indigenous pronunciation, actually, Haiti. What was that? 2019, maybe? 2018, yeah. I think. So it's been a long time. And since things are changing so much and so quickly and so deeply, unfortunately not for the good for now, at least in appearance, that what I say, you know, is somewhat disconnected from the current reality. This being said, I'm in touch continuously and frequently with my family. I still have a lot of family there, and friends and colleagues and contacts. So I'm going to say this first. Haiti is an African country. The Haitian people is an African people. We have influences from other places and ancestry than Africa, but the core of who we are is African. We are Africa in the Americas. And I think Haitians know that, even if we've been conditioned to kind of reject that to a certain degree, to be ashamed of that because of the European colonialist
mindset,
and you know, I don't like to use the term brainwashing, because it was supposed that the brain was dirty, and even the term dirty, I mean, dirt is not unclean. Okay, so we've not brainwashed. Our brain is not unclean, but we've been conditioned against who I am. And actually, I think what Haiti right now is experiencing, which is extreme unbalance, extreme chaos, extreme suffering, extreme violence. You know, we people, the news talk about Ukraine and Palestine and other places, and Haiti right now is at the same level or similar level to a certain degree. People could say it's even worse, but it's not in the news for a reason. I mean, we may not have time to go into those today, but people can think about the reasons. There are historical reasons for that. But I think what the Haitian people is living right now is a microcosm of what humanity can possibly live if we don't pay attention and if we don't make a certain radical turn in the way we are managing our who we are, our environment, and our planet these days. So I know this may not really give all the answers to your question, but I try to, given, you know, otherwise we'd be here for hours just talking about Haiti.
I understand. And here in South Africa, what I've experienced is people who are religious tend to not have an affinity towards spiritual practices, especially traditional ones. So how has that been for you, being an interfaith minister, having been initiated as a shaman in the voodoo practice? How do you integrate those worlds?
So I believe what we call religions, you know, there's also a conversation about what is a religion, you know, what's the definition. And often what we call religions are actually cultures. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we say Christianity, for example, but you take a U.S. American Christian and you take an Ethiopian Christian and you take a Mexican Christian, they don't have the same religion. Okay? But when you take an American Christian and American Muslim, it looks like they don't have the same religion, but their beliefs are kind of similar. Okay, so that's one thing. Another thing I want to bring here is that in my studies and in my reception and communication, I have come to understand that in most religions of the world, there are underground currents that, you know, esoterical or mystical current. And those were traditionally only offered or accessible to the very few, to the people who were very, very committed, and they had to go through rigorous practices and selection and training and education and formation. And the interesting thing is that when you take mystics, when you take people who are initiated in the esoterical teaching of the religion, they all are the same. And they all recognize themselves as brothers and sisters, as the same. So in a sense, that's maybe what we could call spirituality. But in a sense, there is only one religion. If we take the religion as the meaning of what connects us to the greater, you know, people use the term God, but even though people who don't use the term God, you know, there's no word. We can't put a word because it's bigger than us and our language. And so I think the exoterical, the external religion were created and offered for people who were not ready yet to get to the real mystical and esoterical truth. But then humans are humans, and because of all kind of experience that we actually have programmed ourselves to live here, we get disconnected from the source, from who we are. And when we get disconnected, we feel powerless. And when we feel powerless, we try to get power from other people. And then you have politics and power struggles, etc. And you have what religion look like right now, and people are fighting against each other.
What you have mentioned about religion being a form of traditional cultural spiritual practice for many nations is so interesting, because like my grandmother was a Christian, but she was also a trained Sangoma for many years. But there was also a church that she was a part of. And it's almost, well, in my language, it's called Kereke ya Sephiri, meaning it's like a secret church. So it goes on at night. And like some of the people I've spoken to about have said to me, because of colonization and because at some point our people were not allowed to practice their spirituality, they had to go underground with certain practices. So certain things, certain ceremonies, certain rituals had to be done in secret. And I think because of that as well, we've lost so much information, and so many practices in that have also lost their authenticity to a certain degree. Because again, for us African people, information was and knowledge and wisdom was shared orally, you know, and through experiences. Now with the disintegration of families and with people not being able to be themselves, a lot of this information and the practices have been lost. And it's sort of like giving me a sense that this is probably something I might need to include in my research work, because there's a lot of powerful teaching when one looks at it as a form of esoteric practice, you know, because I don't think for us as Africans, we have many of our beliefs, many of our practices that have been given that language, which is acceptable globally, and that people can sort of like identify with. So that's something for me to look into. But in these times, we hear a lot about awareness and about consciousness. What do these words actually mean?
Roberto, you have tough questions. Ay, ay, ay. My first answer is I understand what awareness and consciousness are, but I cannot give them a definition. The definition I'm going to try to give you will probably feel circular, because I you know, consciousness is that which is aware. Okay, but the awareness is the process that consciousness enters into. So I can't. It's difficult to, because it's so transcendental that my little. So this. All right. Let me start here. I want to say a word about my beliefs. I'm a human being. I have beliefs. And I know my beliefs are beliefs. I don't fully believe in my belief. The belief I have today is not the one I had yesterday. And tomorrow I'm going to change. You're going to make me change my belief. I'm open to that. My beliefs are stories I tell myself and I tell you that kind of work for me at this moment. They satisfy my consciousness, but I know they are not the truth. I'm not saying that I'm not sure they are the truth. I know they are not the truth. So because the truth is much bigger than what I can believe. And so this is one thing. So I'm going to talk about my belief, and I'm going to ask you and people not to take my belief too seriously, because I don't take them too seriously. I believe there is one consciousness. That is it. There is nothing else. There is one consciousness. There is nothing that is outside of one consciousness. Everything that we experience, everything that we say exists, everything we say don't exist, the visible, the invisible, are manifestation, expression, formation, projection, perception of that one consciousness. Now, maybe we could write that one consciousness with a capital C. That consciousness manifests, projects, creates multiplicity, infinity of infinities of multiplicities. And what we call the world, what we call our universe, what we call our dimension, what we call ourselves, are little, minute, minuscule manifestation of that one consciousness. Now, I'm going to contradict myself. I say they are minute, minuscule manifestation of that consciousness, but at the same time, they are that one consciousness. Don't ask me to explain that. I just know that. So, now I forgot what the question was. I went a little far away.
Yeah. So the question was
awareness and consciousness. Yes. Okay. So my little consciousness with a little C cannot comprehend, cannot grasp who the one consciousness is, which is who I am, which is my true essence, which is your true essence, which is everyone's true essence, which is our true essence. We all that.
Yeah.
That is my belief. But because as one consciousness, we want to experience multiplicity and separatedness and interaction, we get into this experience and we forget and we limit ourselves. This is an extreme power that we have. We are so powerful that we can limit ourselves, believe in the limit, be actually limited by ourselves, and then hope that we get on a path to remember that we have limited ourselves and we unlimit ourselves and we liberate ourselves.
And that is expansion. And that is where the expansion coach comes in.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely.
I love how you explain consciousness, but I'm also very intrigued by how your belief allows space for others to have their own beliefs. And this is not something we generally find in people who are religious. People who tend to be more religious tend to be very narrow-minded and almost want to enforce their beliefs on other people. So that's just an observation from my end to say, you know, spiritual people, religious people, without generalizing too much, tend to have a certain flexibility and a certain freedom, because there's nothing to prove. You are just being yourself and, you know, you go through life as yourself and allowing other people to be. Now the concept of patriarchy that is often attached or linked to Christianity or forms of religion tie into that. Now, in what ways can shifting our consciousness help us change how we experience life?
I love your questions. Doesn't mean that I can actually answer them, but the question in itself is inspiring. How can shifting our consciousness can change our experience, you said, of life? Yes. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So first, again, you know, if we're talking about shifting consciousness, we're talking about the little consciousness with a little c, because the one consciousness cannot be shifted. It is. There's no way or places to shift, because it contains everything. So my little consciousness, yes, I can shift it. Where to start? So I'm going to take shortcuts because of time. Some of the old past teachers and elders have taught us in many different languages and wording, but they've taught us what we think is material is an illusion. And those who've taught us that are not just spiritual teachers. Even scientists are teaching us that. Albert Einstein told us, energy, matter is energy. Quantum physics right now teaches us there is nothing material here. Even what we thought were atoms and electrons and subatomic particles are not material. So we have been taught everything is consciousness. And I'm going to take this just a little parenthesis. When I to send a little message here to Euro-Western scientists. I have great respect to the Euro-Western science. I have been taught in it myself, and it has brought and is still bringing a lot of great gifts to humanity, to the world, and to the universe. Yes, Western science is fantastic. And Western science is a minute, minuscule manifestation of the one consciousness. And so when I look for definitions in the Western ways and in Western language of what consciousness and awareness are, they're all based on the activity of the brain. They think that, or they say that, or they posit that the brain exists and it creates consciousness. And my understanding is that it is the opposite. Consciousness exists and it manifests the illusion of what we call the brain. And then that brain gives us the consciousness, the one that is aware of perception of life. And this creates our experience. And so we believe, and some cultures, for example, the Euro-Western culture is very materialist and individualist. And I say that with no moral judgment. When I say materialist, it's just based on the existence of matter. Individualist is based on the individual. I'm not putting a judgment on this at this moment, okay? And so the materialist approach teaches that there is a reality out there and we perceive the reality. But there are other approaches, including in many African or Americans, I'm talking about the Americas, you know, ancestral Americas, or other shamanic culture, that teach us there is consciousness and consciousness creates the world. And so our experience is something that we actually project. And when I say we, it's not just individual. It's a collective projection. I mean, part of it is individual and part of it is collective. I hope I'm not too esoterical here. But I'm going to give an example. The modern dominant culture is based on the consciousness of scarcity. There is not enough resources. There is not enough power. There is not enough wealth. There is not enough food. There is not enough space for all of us. So we have to fight against others to take more for us and less for others. And we engage in fight. But we think that it is a reality that we have to adapt to. My belief is that it's not the reality. We create that and then it becomes our experience. When we start from another paradigm, another consciousness, the experience changes. And so theoretically, you know, there are, don't take me too literally or too seriously, what we call miracles and what we call supernatural are not, it's natural because consciousness creates anything it wants. Anything it wants. Now, it's easier said than done. It's not just, I want to believe that there is peace and love and food for everyone in the world, and now we're going to live all in harmony like a big happy family, and poof, it happens. No, it's not just happening like that, because I've been conditioned. And I've conditioned myself, and I have several levels. There is my conscious awareness, but there's all the subconscious levels, okay? And there's the influence of the collective, and there are the wounds. The wounds, and what I project out there is informed by my wounds, and my wounds are what disconnect me from my true nature. So I need to go through a process of healing first.
I love that you've brought in, because it actually leads us to what I wanted to speak about next, which is the separation between people, not only through racial discrimination, but we see how there is like a discomfort, there is hurt, there is conflict within families, within people, within communities of the same skin color, people who share the same traditions and cultures. Do you think how we perceive ourselves has anything to do with this? And why do you think there has been such great effort in ensuring that people don't really know what they're capable of and who they are in relation to this consciousness?
Yes, yes, yes. So, I continue and I repeat, I'm going to provide here my belief, and I don't fully believe in my beliefs. I believe that the cosmic project that we call Earth, life on Earth, the community of life on Earth, and humanity as a part of that community of life on Earth, is a very daring project. And it's a project that, from my perception and my little understanding, is kind of rare in all the multiplicities that one consciousness creates. In what sense that it is rare? In the sense that from the source where we are, where we come from. And when I say where we come from, I'm not talking about we come from in the past. It's all here now. It's all here now. Time is also part of the illusion that we create to get into this experience, okay? But a part of us are not limited in the human consciousness right now. And that part decide to project an aspect of herself, themselves, you know, itself, God self, to accept one, to forget. Second, to be hurt and wounded and damaged. Third, to go through a process of healing, to hopefully fourth, heal, remember, and bring that back, that information and that experience to the one consciousness. We are here to forget who we are, to hurt each other, to try to remember who we are, to, when I say we are here to hurt each other, don't take me to okay? But it's part of the experience. It's part of the experience.
Yeah, and I agree with you because, I mean, I've recently, well, not recently, like the past year and a bit, I've sort of like recognized how certain very painful life experiences have pushed me to go inward and to, you know, but not many people know this, Chaloki, and this is not shared like easily. And I find that some of the language that is used tends to be so intellectual. It tends to be so high level that it becomes difficult to explain it to a person who doesn't necessarily have a particular level of education. And for me, this is the irritating part, and maybe I can take it up with God to say, so if this is why we came, then why do we have people who are healers? Why all this great effort when the whole thing is really about people forgetting and then remembering? Like, I truly struggle to understand it.
Okay, I'm going to try this. I'm going to give two analogies, and they're poor analogies, but first analogy is this, or maybe not an analogy, just a thought experiment. Let's say we make it. We start collectively to remember who we are. We heal, you know, as a humanity. we reconnect with who we are individually, collectively, with the community of life on Earth. We reconnect with the Earth. We reconnect with our spiritual essence. We reconnect with our ancestors, the unborn. We reconnect with our God self. We reconnect with one consciousness in, let's say, 100,000 years. Okay? And in 100,000 years, we live in a beautiful, harmonious, luminous, I mean, powerful, extremely satisfying way. All right. Now, let's imagine there's another planet in another dimension where we're going to be in 100,000 years. They've always been there. They've never experienced racism. They've ever experienced gender, you know, violence. They've never experienced patriarchy. They've never experienced war. Nothing negative. They've just been that all the way since the beginning. And when we reach them, that's their only experience. Who do you think between us and them has brought more to one consciousness? Who do you think will be more respected, more honored? Who do you think will be stronger for the future problem that may arise?
Probably us, who have gone through certain challenges, right? Yeah, but it still does hurt me when I tend to feel like sometimes people are helpless because the information is not always easy to digest, to integrate. I struggle with that, and I hope I can eventually get to a place where I fully understand why the suffering we have on Earth. But outside of that, we've spoken about the different religions in the world, including Christianity. We know about the Muslim religion as well. Generally, people believe whichever God they serve is a God of love, compassion, kindness, and all these beautiful things, right? And of faith. And I mean, when we look at the world, I think generally in the world, we have more religious people, right? But we still have this contrast of this violence in the world. Why do you think people are so religious? They all believe in their different gods of love and of compassion and of kindness and all of that. And yet there's so much violence. And when I talk about violence, I'm not only referring to the physical violence, just how we tend to treat each other, how we speak to each other, how we engage, not only with each other as human beings, but with nature as well. Why do you think that is?
Actually, for the same reason as what we just said before, because of the forgetfulness, because of the illusion of separation, because of the feeling of powerlessness, and because all of that creates wounds. You know, when we come here, just the firstborn, actually, the birth itself is often experienced as a wound. It's the first wound. You know, we come and we suffer. Many of the, you know, some, you have all kind of religions again, and I think often when we talk about religions these days, we talk about the so-called revealed religions, religions who have a prophet at some point who came with a message, and people started to follow that prophet to their level of capacity, at their level of capacity. And often those prophets, because they didn't, as you said, you know, people are not conscious, they're not educated, they may be ready to follow instructions, but they don't understand exactly what's behind the message. And so with the instructions often came, you cannot change anything in what you're taught. This is who God is, and this is how you have to worship God, and you have to do this and that, and sacrifices, and here and that, and bow and pray and dress like this, and don't eat this on Thursday, and This is the only way you can be connected to God and you can please God, because that's what they could understand. Okay. So those people follow those instructions and then they find someone else who have an other instruction. Okay. Yeah. And so, you're not doing it right. You're not doing it right. I'm going to show you how you should do it. And even if at the beginning, the intention is a good intention, you know, I want to save you from hell. I laugh because the people who want to save me from hell are the people who invented hell. Without them, hell wouldn't even exist. Okay, that's another conversation. But I want to save you from hell. And so I tell you, you're doing it wrong. I'm going to show you how to do it. And of course, you know that you're doing it right. I'm doing it wrong. So you react and we start to fight.
I understand. You know, so if the invitation is to take up the challenge of being here on earth, right, and figuring out what we have forgotten and who we are, what tools can people integrate in their lives to increase their sense of awareness and to not feel hard done by life? You know, because, I mean, particularly the experiences of people of color, they have been so violent. And one can argue that the colonizers, they're probably more wounded in how... they're probably more wounded, and that is why they have had this need to dominate and to be so violent towards other people. What do you think we can share with the world, with the Conscious Conversations community, as tools of really getting in touch with who they are and accessing that power from within and finding ways of remembering who they really are?
Okay. First, I want to say that I agree with you. From my perspective, people who oppress others, people who try to control others, people who separate and keep others down, and people who create privilege for themselves and underprivileged for others are often much more wounded, much more forgetful than, you know, between the slave and the master. I think the master is much damaged, is more damaged than the slave. The slave is damaged in their body in this lifetime. The master, I think, is damaged at a higher level. It's a greater challenge. Okay, so that's one thing that, you know, people may agree or not, or understand or not. We can discuss about that. But let me gather my thoughts so I don't go all over the place. I have to be honest. I don't really have an answer to that question that will apply a blanket answer to everyone. I'm going to respond. Those may not be answers exactly. I'm going to respond to what you say. And some people may relate to what I say and some others won't. Because we're here, each of us are here to manifest certain vibration, certain energy. We have some kind of mission. Mission is a big word, some goal. We're manifesting something and it's in multiplicity. And so some of us are here to help others heal. Some of us are here to teach others. Some of us are here to challenge each other. Some of us are here to stir the pot and create problems, so it makes it a little more challenging, and so the result is more valuable. Yeah. I mean, and so I cannot speak really to the people who are so far from my, because okay, I want to be honest still. Some ancestors are here. I respect deeply everyone. All humans, all living beings are my brothers and sisters, and I respect and love them. But when I see a lion or a tiger, I'm not going to have a cup of coffee with them. And when I see someone who's trying to hurt me and my family, I'm going to fight. Because we are here on this plane to manifest who we are. One of my personalities is a warrior. And sometimes the warrior is sleeping, sometimes he's, you know, taking a rest, and sometimes he's on duty. I'm going to do it with all respect. With all respect, but I'm still going to do it. And so if you come to me and you activate the warrior is not going to try to teach you love and peace and harmony. I'm sorry. Okay? So, I'm going to say something that may be a little controversial here. And again, it's not for everyone because, you know, there's trauma. And trauma is something so special, so delicate, so strong, okay? I want to respect that, and what I say may not apply completely to people who are experiencing extreme trauma, okay? I want to be clear about that. So this being said, I think people who are experiencing being oppressed, injustice, being impoverished, we have a responsibility. Because often we are the one, I say we because part of me is that too. Part of me is privileged. I have to recognize that. You know, I told you as a Haitian, I'm still trying to make harmony between all my influences here. My ancestors are still fighting against each other. And I'm telling them, hey, wait. Let's talk this through. So we have a responsibility, I believe, because in many ways, in many senses, we are a little less forgetful than them.
Yeah.
And let's simplify. I don't want to make this too simplistic, but we have to recognize the dominant colonialist, sexist, patriarchist culture right now is, as you said, attached in some ways to the Euro-Western culture and to their religions. It's not the only one, okay, but it's dominating a big part of the world, and big part of our mind and bodies. Okay. That culture is at a degree of forgetfulness that is way, way, way beyond that common traditional animist and shamanic cultures. And the African cultures, many of them are animist and shamanic cultures. And indigenous cultures are animist and shamanic cultures. And in Asia too. And so in animist and shamanic cultures, we have a sense of who we are that is a little better, a little closer. From my perspective, in my belief, I'm going to use a term here. Please don't take me too literally. White people.
Mm.
And when I say white people, I'm not talking about a skin color. Okay, let's be clear about that. I'm talking a paradigm. I'm talking about the Western Euro culture. Some white people have a black skin.
Yeah.
Okay. And some people with white skin are not white people. Okay. So white people are forgotten who they are completely, totally. And they needed that. They needed that because that allowed them to give us internet, which we're using right now, so we have to be thankful for that. In the focus on the materialistic aspect of nature allowed them to create a technology that we are using. It's also allowed them to create things and processes and devices that are threatening to destroy all life of humanity. And so the responsibility, a part of responsibility is on us to say, hey, brother, sister, okay, let me remind you who you are. Okay, you have to slow down here. You have to stop because you're trying to do this to us and you think it's good for you, but it's not going to be good for you at the end. Okay, mm-hmm. We're all in this, in the same boat, and we have kind of a memories of ways that we can do this better. All right? And this will come with understanding that we're connected to each other. We're connected to nature. We're connected to many, many invisible being. And what you do to me, you do it to the whole and you do it to yourself.
Absolutely. So, Loki, what are, or can you share with us a couple of reflective or introspective questions or prompts that anybody who is interested in increasing their sense of awareness about who they are can sort of like work with in deepening that relationship with themselves? What would you say people can sort of like introduce in their daily practice in how they think about themselves? If indeed we believe ourselves to be created by God, if we believe that God has created us in his image, then how should we be looking at ourselves? And I think this is particularly tied to what you've just said. When you hurt somebody else, you are hurting yourself, right? So how can we begin to think about some of these issues?
I don't actually have only one question, or it's a set of questions that is one. And again, I feel led to say that again and again and again, it's not for everyone. Yeah. Because it's based on my belief and on my paradigm, and people who don't share that, well, they will think I'm crazy, or I'm talking about things that don't have any sense. And that's fine. I know that there's no problem. So I know that what I'm going to say is just for some people, not everyone. That's okay. Mm. I'm going to share my practice. My practice is simple. Whether I'm in meditation or not, when I'm in a situation, I try to remember this. I tell myself, okay, I am the one consciousness. If I were fully aware that I was the one consciousness here now, what would I do? How would I feel? What would I say? What would I not say? What would I not do? Who would I be? What would I manifest? How would I react? How would I proact? If right now I would completely be aware that I am the one consciousness, loving, encompassing, powerful, luminous God.
Wow. I love that. I really love that. Thank you so much, Jeloki, for your insights, for your wisdom. I honor your people, your guides, and all the energies that have made it possible for us to have this conversation. How can people reach you if they were interested in having a conversation with you?
Thank you. They can reach me on the website for now, that I'm not on social media much yet. And so the website is, there's a place where you can contact me. It's connaissancecoaching.com. Connaissance is a Creole word for that's a lot of conversation. So I'm going to spell it. It's KONESANSCOACHING.com. Yes, connaissancecoaching.com.
I'll try and get it on our pages as well. But really, I do appreciate your time. Thank you very much. Until we speak again.
very soon, I hope. Thank you very much, my dear Mabatu. Thank you and blessings to all the team and to everyone. Much love and much respect.
Thank you.